Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, this is Chris.
And Mary.
We're back from a long trip out east, and we recorded a very special episode out there, and we're going to play it for you now. Enjoy.
Good evening, and welcome to The Man About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-host in this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Archived on iTunes and Stitcher.
As well as HeritageRadioNetwork.org. So we are in Hong Kong at HK Brewcraft, which is Hong Kong's only homebrewing supply store, and also a bottle shop. So we're here with...
Hello, my name is Chris from HK Brewcraft.
And?
I'm Phil. I'm a homebrewer.
I'm Josh. I'm the president of the Homebrewers Association in Hong Kong.
And I'm Rohit. I'm the founder of Young Master Ales, a new microbrewery in Hong Kong.
And everybody here comes from a homebrewing background. You're still homebrewing.
Yeah, I'm very new to this, so I only made two batches so far.
And you when did you join the Sudbrook Hong Kong Brew Association?
Before it started, actually. So
we kind of all sat down and said, "This is really so that we should all have a place. Like we meet up casually, you know, every month. We should really make it more, you know, provide a better platform for people to show up." And so we went ahead and.
And did you all meet here at HK Brewcraft?
What was the first one? At the Globe, maybe.
The Globe was the first one, which is one of the larger local bars with a large selection.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did that happen before HK Brewcraft came to existence? Tell us a little bit about HK Brewcraft.
I think that happened before HK Brewcraft started. Before HK Brewcraft started, there was very little ingredients or supplies to home brew with, and that's kind of how these people got together, because Josh taught me how to brew, you know, without... typical homebrewing supplies, so you can go to the supermarket and get all kinds of crazy stuff and start fermenting with it, right?
So, you can ferment anything.
Right, so and of course there is a need for homebrew supplies, so we're starting HK Brewcraft just to, you know, supply all kinds of, you know, equipment, ingredients, and whatever you need to make beer with.
Yeah. We were talking a little bit before the show, you were born in Texas, Chris, and then you've been living here since you were four.
Mm-hmm.
What have you seen in the craft beer scene? What got into you into craft beer or into good beer? How did it come about that you started homebrewing?
I think it all started in the last 5 years when I stayed in San Francisco. I came across this homebrew store, SF Brewcraft, and I bought my first kit there, my first ingredient package, followed it step by step, went through the whole process, and I made a lot of beer. And it worked out pretty well. It was good beer. I was nervous before I drank it, but it turned out really well, so I just kept going.
Yeah.
So you were living in San Francisco at the time?
Yeah.
Okay, and then when did you move back to Hong Kong?
I moved back to Hong Kong in 2013.
Okay.
Which is, again, the year when I started HK Brewcraft. Because I came back and wanted to brew. There was nothing for me to brew with, so...
I've been coming back and forth here since 1995 when my parents moved here, and it has been just a desert for craft beer on the most part. So it's really, really, really exciting to see that you've opened up and that also other beer establishments have kind of started popping up. And especially, Rohit, you just started a project. Tell us a little about the project.
Yeah, so like Chris, I started home brewing as well. And before Hong Kong, I used to live in New York City. And, you know, there's a lot of good beer pretty much anywhere you look there. So when I moved here, the only way to drink beer was basically to make your own. So at that time, Chris hadn't set up his shop, so I had to buy homebrew supplies from Singapore or States or elsewhere and just be creative and, you know, and find a way to make it work. And then, you know, I realized there's no local microbrewery and, you know, I was at a stage in my life looking to do something different, and, you know, it all sort of came together and worked on it last year, and now we like.
It's really exciting. That's how the craft beer revolution started in the United States in the 80s, and, or, you know, everybody was at the loss for good beer, and back then they brewed because of that. I mean, now it's interesting to find home brewers in cities this big, because you can generally get any kind of beer that and you don't have to make it yourself. But that's still not the case for Hong Kong yet. But but the efforts that are being made, and the fact that you made HK Brewcraft a place to buy solid beers. I mean, your list is kind of ridiculous over there for what you have. And it's awesome.
We'll get to go through them all tonight, right?
Yeah. I expect to taste every one of those tonight. but you do a lot of... So how many people are in the HK Brew Association?
Well, typically on our meetups, we have anywhere between 5 people to show up or up to 30 people showing up.
Okay.
But on our group, I mean, our mailing list, we have about,
50
people or so.
50.
And like, we're getting more likes, you know, every day. We just started our Facebook page, what, 2 months ago?
We still didn't have our official name, right?
So. Yes, I just got a letter from them recently, and so I just signed it and sent it back to them. We're getting official, people. We're getting official.
All right. We need to register with the government.
We did.
Name, and so we were originally the Hong Kong Brewers Association.
Correct, and they were like, well, brewers, so we said, okay, well, if it's home brewers, home brewing is technically legal in Hong Kong, so how about it? And then they said, yes, fine, let's do that option, and then... Signed.
So we are officially Hong Kong Brewers Association.
Correct.
Hong Kong Brewers Association.
Okay. I just sent it to them today. So,
and do you have a website hooked up for that?
We have a Facebook page, okay. facebook.com/brewers.hk.
Brewers.hk.
Yeah, that's also the URL, but yeah, we don't have a page up yet. So,
And you guys meet how regularly?
We meet once a month, but us, sort of as the members, we meet maybe every other week or every week almost.
Yeah. Yeah. Anytime we feel like drinking.
It's called research and development.
Typically it's once a month for the whole group, right? We just send out an email, say we're gonna meet somewhere, and come if you're available.
We had our last meeting at the Young Masters Brewery.
Yes,
that was really cool. Sunday afternoon, overlooking the harbor, was great.
That's great. I think it's important that I think hopping around is a really great thing for you guys to be doing, to be supporting these places that are fighting the good fight in this.
Exactly, they're also nice enough to allow us to bring in our own homebrew as well.
Yeah,
right.
Because most establishments, they only sell what they have, but these places, they allow us to bring beer that we don't buy from the shop, and allow us to.
Tip nice and pay your taxes by buying at least one beer. So you have 60 people, 50 roughly on the mailing list.
Around 50.
And that's growing. And that's in how long was the...
Took a while, actually.
It took a while, but I mean, that was just casually sort of...
A while being what? We've been open here at HK Brewcraft for 8 months?
8 months,
yeah.
It's probably a little bit less than that, maybe 6 months then? 7 months?
The official list, was about that time, right? But, I think we first all got together was about a year ago.
Yes.
Right? That was immediately after the first homebrew competition.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? So, but, there was no homebrew kind of gathering.
So, you guys had a homebrew competition a year ago. How many entrants did you have, and how did you decide? Who decided to organize this? How did this occur?
Well, you have the winner right here. You talk about it.
How did you hear about the competition?
How did you hear about it? So I think, just taking a step back about the craft beer scene in Hong Kong, right? I think I'm told in the past people have tried various things, but what's unique about now is that there's a bunch of importers importing some really cool craft beer. There's homebrew supply shop. There's a homebrewers association. There's a craft beer association. Now there's a brewery. All of these things. And there are bars with genuine tap rooms. So every piece of the puzzle that needs to come together is coming together.
Yeah.
So I think, the homebrew competition last year, I found out through some of the importers, basically they were behind, importers in Globe and few of these guys got together and decided that there should be a homebrew competition.
How many entrants were in that first competition?
20 varieties, but I think
individual brewers.
I think there were about 10. Ten to 12 individual brewers. Yeah.
And are they all now members of the Hong Kong Homebrewers Association?
If they're not, they're already members of the Craft Beer Association. Yeah,
so. What is the Craft Beer Association?
Ooh, fill your chart. We'll talk about that.
Actually, I'm not one of the founders, but one company that I co-own, right, is one of the importers.
Okay.
And so it's one of the founders of that of the CBAHK, Craft Beer Association Hong Kong. So it's basically a group of companies and individuals that, you know, that likes craft beer. And as far as company goes, basically any company that actually has something to do with craft beer, whether you're a distributor, importer, a retail outlet, service provider, right, or a brewery, then you're part of this. But that's individuals, then it's basically anybody who enjoys craft beer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I like that that exists.
And then
how old is that association?
It's about the same as 6 months. Yeah, about
okay,
6 months.
Yeah,
about the same time as the Homebrewers Association, except that they were a lot more organized. They have like legit backgrounds, and so they were approved right away.
Yeah,
because right.
It comes
already.
From the business, right?
Sure. Exactly.
It's more a trade association.
Of course,
right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now, and then the second year homebrew competition is coming up.
Yes,
right.
Next month. In what, 2 weeks?
February 15th.
February 15th, yeah, so 2 weeks from now.
And is that also the same kind of people who are sponsoring or
yes,
starting?
Yes, it kind of like was like a torch passing kind of
yeah,
because it's more homebrew related, and so since now we have two different associations, we're basically sister associations, and so it's kind of been passed over. Chris is actually kind of helping to organize that a lot as well.
So it's going well, exciting.
Yeah, it was last year it was organized by mainly it was driven by Lori Goldberg. She runs AmeriCraft, which is one of the importers.
Mm-hmm.
So she worked with a few other importers like Hop Leaf, which I'm a part of, and then The Globe, and then a few other individuals, right? And then started it. And then, because they know a very good number of people. They got great support from Toby of The Globe, and so it came about. And this year, because of the Homebrew Association, we now have a bunch of people who are actually doing the homebrewing ourselves, right? Lori decided, why don't we work together? We'll pass on the torch and, come and help us organize it, right? So that's kind of the transition period right now.
And how are you guys, do you adhere by BJCP categories, or how is it organized?
Well, I guess the foundation will still be by BJCP categories, but we'll decide that after, taking a toll, how many entries we get, and then we'll split the categories. We'll try to stick to BJCP as much as we can, but then of course we need to have enough numbers of judges that kind of know how that works.
And enough entries, and in fact, we are hoping that at least this time we can have categories as
right.
opposed to just one.
So if you have 20 entries, it's
exactly.
essentially
right,
best
right.
of show.
Yes.
Right. It, importance of what if they're good for what they're entered as.
Yes.
Right. But
right.
they enter under like a category.
We have them list out the categories,
okay.
description, all kinds of details. That way, the more details, the better.
And then who judges?
We're just putting together the judging list. It's going to be based on what we know as the beer experts in Hong Kong. Some of them are chefs, some of them are importers. Some of them bar owners. Rohit is a brewer.
That's right. Allowed to enter.
And also, we're also considering some other judges, such as like a coffee expert or wine expert who have great palate, great nose.
Yeah.
So those we'll also consider. So we'll probably put together, depending on the number of entries we get, we'll see how many groups of judges we need for this competition.
Yeah.
It's looking good. We're getting at least 30 entries before the deadline,
wow.
So we're guessing there's going to be a lot more before the day of. So we'll see how that goes.
Very cool.
For Hong Kongonians that do not brew, they can come here and learn how to brew. Is that correct?
That's correct. We do workshops during the weekends. It's a 3-hour crash course, everything about craft beer. We do 1 gallon brew in a batch. We do different styles. This month we're doing...
But you said you do brew in a bag?
Yes, we do.
That's exciting stuff.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to brew in Hong Kong, given the small space you have at home. You can get everything done with one pot, one stove, and then finish with a small gallon of beer that you can probably ferment under your desk at the office.
It's actually a great place because the air conditioner is on all the time.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
There's another big thing for us out here, so yeah.
I should have thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you do different themed workshops? So you said this weekend...
This week we're doing the hipster ale, so we got the recipe
the
from the Evil Twins,
yeah.
And we're having it on tap this week.
Oh, awesome.
So they can compare what they're brewing and what the real thing is.
So let's talk about what you guys did. So you mentioned that. What did you do before HK Brewcraft?
I came about to brewing a bit differently, I think, from a lot of other people. It was, you know, I was out one night with some buddies and a guy who had done a lot of homebrewing in the U.S., and he said, you know, living out here, that's one thing I miss is brewing my own stuff. So what did you mean? And he started talking about it, and he said, but there's one thing you could do is you could make your own cider, apple cider. So I said, what? And I said, tell me about it. And so he, you know, told me what the ingredients were. Super simple. I went out the next week, I bought everything, and I made something that didn't kill me. And I thought, there's something to do with this. And then I was like, well, actually, hold on, this is really simple. How come more people aren't doing this? And I started doing more research, I started reading a lot, and I really got into the whole idea of it being kind of an agricultural and cultural thing, the idea of homebrewing. I mean, if you look back in the history, just that to me was very fascinating. The tying in with the spirituality and then the whole agriculture and family, and that to me was kind of intriguing. That's kind of where it started for me, and also realizing that Hong Kong didn't really have a brewing identity. There's no particular beer or wine or whatever that's like, ah, you go into Hong Kong, you gotta go drink that. That's what they do,
right?
So that was a big question for me, and I started buying stuff. I started going to local farmers, and actually I make mead, actually. Yeah. That's one of my favorite things to make. And so behind my house there's an apiary, and so I walk up to the apiary and talk to them and say, hey, what do I need? And then they sell me in jars. I walk down, or I can call them and they'll deliver it to me, and it's great because I get to use the honey that's local here. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I'm trying to do. I'm all about keeping it as local as possible when I can, when it's doable.
What did you do for yeast?
Yeah.
Well, initially I tried different baker's yeast until there was, you know, stuff available here, or until I went back, or until I had a friend coming to visit. Mm-hmm. When I had friends coming to visit, I would say, go to this place. This is my list of yeast. I was one of the first ones that could just pack it up and, you know, send it over or whatever. But I would try different baker's yeasts, actually. And you kind of start figuring out which ones have very strong off flavors and which ones attenuate better and things like that. But yeah, nowadays yeast is much easier to get. Thank you, Chris. Thank you.
Yeah.
Chris.
So I first came across your name in Time Out New York because you had a lemon tea beer.
Correct.
So tell us a little bit about how you came up with that.
Sure. So that I had been reading very, very avidly for about 3 months straight, different kinds of books. And one of them was, I think it's C.J. Berry. He had a book about wine and different homebrewing in UK. And one of the things he came up with, one of the things he talked about was tea beer, or tea wine, I think is what they called it. And what had happened around the same time was there's a local organization. They said that, hey, we'd like to do a local, kind of a local gathering, kind of a social movement thing in Yau Ma Tei. Really local area, and then they wanted to have like a mobile beer cart kind of a thing, and they're like, can we make beer? And I was like, well, what do you have? And they said nothing. And I said, well, great, let me think about something for you. And so I went back and I started reading, well, what do we have that's available? And it's a local, it's a Hong Kong thing, but what's big here? And of course, you know, iced lemon tea is very big here, and it's a very distinct kind of a flavor. It's Ceylon tea. You know, there's a certain number of lemon tea. It's just a very specific flavor. And I thought, well, you know, that would work. I mean, you have your sugars, you have your lemon, the acidity should be about right. Baker's yeast will have to do, because there wasn't much of it. They gave me like 6 days. And so I was like, well, let me give it a try. And I did it, and it turned out okay. I mean, it didn't ferment, obviously it didn't ferment all the way, so it was a little bit sweet, but that was actually preferable. And it worked out really well, and I thought I was onto something there. And then Time Out approached me through that event, and then I shared that, and that's why it's online.
Now, and then when Chris and I had decided we were coming here, and we were kind of deciding if we wanted to contact, I came across your Facebook page, and you also have banana wine. Is that correct?
Yeah. So there's a.
Tell us a little bit about.
Well, yeah, sure. Yeah. So like I said, like, I really enjoy the whole local aspect. I like the idea of, you know, using things that are available locally and seasonal, and so plantains. And certain local strains of banana are available here. And so I'm friends with a farm / restaurant way out in the New Territories out here. If you have time, I'd take you guys out there. And they're like, hey, we got a bunch of bananas. Can we do something with it? And I was like, yeah, you can do that. So I went out there, and then, you know, we we boiled it, we sliced it, we boiled it, we added the sugar, and we pitched it. And right now, it's aging. But yeah, so that was just the experience of, you know, they went out and they just cut it down, and it was great. That's that kind of connection to what it is that you're brewing.
Absolutely.
You don't always get when you go to a homebrew store necessarily. I mean, it's still great because you're still touching it, but just that whole experience kind of connects you to it a bit more. So that was nice.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
That's a question. So, how's the water here for brewing?
Yeah.
In Hong Kong, and this is the guy to go.
Test and everything.
No, I think when I first started home brewing, I didn't do any sort of scientific tests, and then I read the official report that the water supply department has, and it just says water is very low mineral, which it is, but it wasn't quite specific, and it didn't have all the information needed to do a proper sort of water adjustment and things like that. But at the brewery, we got a proper lab test done. What ends up happening in Hong Kong often is the base water that comes from the source is actually extremely clean and is extremely low mineral. But I think individual pipings in some of the buildings that can be quite old, water quality can vary. So you really have to test it at the location. So we tested it and we found it to be extremely low mineral and extremely clean, very limited biological content, dissolved solids and stuff like that. So initially it started as, you know, I need to prove people wrong that Hong Kong water is not good for brewing or drinking, whatever. But it evolved into something more because I see Hong Kong water as just a blank slate. You can do whatever you want because it's really hard to take minerals out, but you can always adjust the mineral profile. So for every beer we brew, we actually adjust salts accordingly, you know, so we can mimic any historical water style or whatever it is. So that actually gives us a lot more flexibility. So I think, you know, in that sense, Hong Kong water is great.
Do they add chlorine or chlorine? Do you have to worry about that?
No, we actually measured. They do add chlorine, but the chlorine content came out to like 0.something part per million, and apparently above five parts per million is when it starts getting noticeable. Mm-hmm. And free chlorine, when it's in such low quantities, anyway boils off.
Right.
So you have to worry about it at like at least 10 times as much chlorine. So, you know, we didn't
So what do you guys like to brew now?
And anything. I mean, like this month I've been trying out with local ingredients, you know, that I tried. Like a tea and coffee blend with the lactose. You know, Chinese people like to drink tea and coffee and condensed milk in the same drink.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, like milk tea, milk coffee.
Pretty much, yeah. Giving that kind of stuff a little try. So anything local that I can get my hands on, I'll give it a go. Like the weather is nice in Hong Kong. I guess that's the challenging part about home brewing in Hong Kong. It gets really hot after, let's say, May. From May to November, that's summer for that 6 months. So this is a good time to brew. And so I'll take this chance to brew as much as I can.
And it's relatively temperate then from November to May, though, right? I mean, we're generally in mid-60s.
Yeah. It never gets too cold, so it's just great. You know, just let everything sit in your room and it just works out.
Is that saisons in summertime?
So what do you guys do at your meetings? Do you have themed meetings, or have you had speakers, or kind of, you know, what have you done, what has worked, and what direction do you think
you mean besides
you go
sitting
in
and drinking?
Yeah.
So typically, we haven't had any themed meetings yet. I know some homebrewers, they do that, they have themes. I think maybe down the line we'll get a better structure. I think it'd be more fun, and people can brew things, you know, for it. Yeah. Right now it's just people, you know, whoever can show up, please show up. Let's hang out, let's talk, we catch up on what's going on in the industry, because we're quite tight-knit here in the city, and we're even more tight-knit the fact that we're all home brewers, and, you know, into craft beer and craft brewing. But I think moving forward, we'd like to do more themed things, and maybe also provide more chances to do different workshops, or have guests Actually, since you guys are in town, maybe that's something to think about.
I think we're actually shooting for brewing something all together for the next beer fest, which is coming out in March.
To ask that.
All going to put ourselves into different teams and just, you know, brew something together.
So getting back to styles, what do you guys see? Like, what are homebrewers interested in, even in, you know, in buying craft beer or making their own beer? What's kind of the trend right now?
How interesting about Hong Kong is you get a mix of different types of customers here. It's very, very mixed. But if you're just talking about the local taste palates, they actually don't like the bitterness from hops. They like the aromas and all that, but they're not a big fan of bitterness. So what's popular is normally something that has a lot of late hopping, especially if you add, you know, Australians, New Zealand hops. Those normally go very, very popular when you smell that.
Yeah.
Right before it just blows their mind, and they forget about how big the beer is, how malty it is. It's 12%, they don't care. It smells good, it works.
Yeah.
Do you guys get a lot of New Zealand hops over here? Or a decent amount? I mean, for us, it's relatively, I mean, they're pretty in demand in the States.
I guess that depends on what the breweries in Hong Kong plan on doing in the future.
So I've looked into New Zealand hops quite a bit. As a home brewer, they were actually very relatively easy to get. Actually, even in New York, like homebrew size, fairly easy to get.
But once you step up.
But for me, as a brewery, I could not get Nelson Sauvignon's, all sold out. I could have gotten last year's crop, which I didn't want. Galaxy is another rare hop from Australia, which is similar, which we do have. We managed to source it early enough. I think going forward, we'll probably be able to get more New Zealand hops as well. We're trying to do a collaboration with a brewery in New Zealand. So we're working on that. Right now, for sort of, if you want that sort of Southern Hemisphere tropical fruit type thing, we fall back on Galaxy.
Yep.
For now.
So the homebrewers mainly just get pellets.
Yeah.
So I mean, you're fairly easy. You can get whatever you want. You know, suppliers in the States, you carry a lot. Or you can just piggyback on whatever they have.
And another thing I've noticed is, like, you don't, whereas, like, particular regions, like, if you, let's say you go to, like, the UK or whatever, they like their cider a particular way, for example.
Right.
And so if they try, like a French, like a Brittany style, they're like, what is that? You know, whatever. Or if they have, like, a Spanish style, like, oh, what's this wild, funky dryness that I, no. Whereas here, because of just the nature of the city itself and the people that come together, there's more sharing and there's more like, oh, that's interesting. I didn't know about that. Oh, that's, oh, wow. And so that is really nice to see. And there's less of this sort of territorial, my style is better than your style. It's more like, I like to try that. Let me try that. Let me try to make that. Which is really great to see.
It's a very melting pot city, and everybody's open to diversity.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, if you look at the beers I carry, definitely, because I spent some time in the States, that's what I have. It doesn't mean that that's what my customer likes to drink. You know, there's actually a store not too far away from here that carries a lot of English beer.
Right.
I mean, definitely there is demand for both types of beer. But if you look at the customers that walk into here, homebrewers, you see a very diverse style. Like, there's English, there's American, and then there's whatever. It's a mixed style of both. So when you look at what people buy, it's just hard to predict, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are there many, you said there's a store around the corner that does craft beer. Are there a lot of bottle shops here in the city now?
I think there's one in the New Territories in Cycle. Mm-hmm. They have, I think, the widest selection in terms of craft beer.
Really?
And then there's one in Tsim Sha Tsui. And then they have their specialty, I think, is Italian. Italian and American now, because the owner is half Italian. And then there's one English one in Saipun. There's one English one in the pier near the harbor, you know, to catch people before they get home on the ferry. And then I think this is the fifth
one.
There's
you. Yeah. So, yeah, there's five in this gigantic city in Hong Kong, where the biggest cities in the world, with all sorts of things coming in and out of here. And, you know,
focusing on craft beer. But, of course, there are other outlets that focus on wine, but also carry beer.
Okay,
ah,
that's true. And that those are important places to have, because the idea is to kind of let those people know that this beer can stand up to what they think, or what they, you know, most people think.
Yeah. I mean, slowly but surely, right? I mean, some of these wine companies, if they're retail outlets, they're starting to carry more beer, and wine importers are also looking into importing beer on their own. Chris probably knows this more than I do, because they come to you and try to see if they can sell some of their beers.
Yeah, that's true. So there's a lot of different beers, a lot of beers coming into Hong Kong. It's, again, very, very special place, Hong Kong, because you get beers from all over the world, and it's so easy to get beers into Hong Kong that people will keep trying. You know,
yeah,
get
it's beer from zero tax coming to come into Hong Kong
that's
for
right.
beer, same as wine.
That's right.
So at one point, a lot of people just started bringing wine, but yeah, and people thought that beer's the same flavor. They don't know about the variety of craft beer that's out there, and so not a lot of people actually look into that until maybe about like what 2 years ago, when a few independent importers that actually look into it and say, you know, there's an opportunity here. I mean, they can't single out wine, right? So they have to tie it to something like alcohol ABV level, and so anything below that,
it's
tax-free, so beer is usually typically below 14%, right?
I think they set that 30%.
They set it at below
30%.
Basically saying if it's not a spirit.
Yes,
right. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
And then as far as, do they have to pay for label approval or anything like that? Is it kind of open?
No, I think the importers probably know better. I mean, I think label-wise, as far as I know, there aren't many
registration or
there's only two requirements.
Yeah.
One is the best buy or expiration date, and the other is the ABV.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're below, if I remember correctly, if it's below 3%, then you need to have the nutritional information.
Okay.
But if you're above that, you don't have.
So between 3 and 30. You're good.
So if you make kielbasa, you gotta talk.
So no sort of English miles, like the 2%.
Like a really, yeah. Right. How is this place faring in the 8 months?
It's good. We see a very, very steep growth. Later on, we found out there's a lot of home brewers in Hong Kong that just somehow thought it's illegal to brew in Hong Kong, even though the law changed 4 or 5 years ago. And so, this is a great place for home brewers to meet each other, to find out that, you know, there's actually someone else out there. It's actually quite funny how I met these guys. I think Phil was delivering, or his staff was delivering to my home, some beer. I bought a keg from the company, and they saw a fermenter sitting in my apartment. And then somehow, 2 days later, I got an email from Phil, and I was like, okay.
So, actually, Chris had the party, right?
Yeah.
You had a party where you actually ordered a keg, and so we had to deliver we use a flash cooler, right? So we delivered the flash cooler. So
flash cooler, you mean like a jockey box?
It's like a jockey box, except it's electrically powered.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I went back to his apartment, tried to pick it up, right? And then went to his actual floor and said, hey, there's a carboy. Like, I wonder what's that doing here. Chris wasn't there, but they have their maid there. All right, so I had a little chat with the maid. I grew up in the Philippines, so the maid was from the Philippines. So, So I had a little friendly chat, and then she said, "Oh, my boss makes beer." Right, and so I'll look it up, and then Chris ordered beer from us. We know his email, so I sent Chris an email and said, hey, you know what, we should come and get together, maybe get some, and I think that's where the brewers, get meeting started.
I think,
right?
That was the first brewers meeting, and then that's when I discovered that I'm not the only one brewing it.
I wasn't brewing back then, right, but I was interested in it. I thought, this is something that we should get into. And then that was also about the same time, maybe a few weeks later, it was the homebrewers competition,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I got the email addresses from Lori, who organized it, and so I kind of like sent out the email to the rest of the people and say, hey, we should meet up.
You actually hooked a lot of us up, Phil, because you found me from the same article that
Time
and then you emailed me,
yes.
And then we met at that first meeting, Chris.
and then he taught all of my partners how to brew lemon tea beer in my house.
That's fantastic. I think it's going to grow and grow, and this is the start of a really awesome rebirth or birth in Hong Kong. It's never been a craft beer appreciation place.
And I think it changed my mind when we had one customer came in. She took a workshop. She does not speak or read any English. And she kept brewing batches after batches, and she's up to her 10th batch already. And that, you know, that's just great when that happens. It's exciting, you know. Not like when some other brewer comes in, you know, buys an extract kit and just leaves, you know. But this lady, she's completely new to her, but she learned how to do it, and she's pretty much perfecting that pale ale that she's making.
Yeah. So actually, that's a good question. Do you teach your classes in English and
English and Chinese? We haven't mastered Mandarin yet, but so far just English and Chinese. If we're teaching Mandarin, it'd probably be a comedy show more than one.
So besides space and temperature, what are some other challenges that you guys have as homebrewers?
Well, it was ingredients.
Right.
Well, it still kind of can be sometimes. It depends.
You only get dry yeast right
exactly.
now.
Well,
you
yeah,
can't stock although, everything here. I mean,
I just ordered some cider and mead liquid yeast for you.
Oh.
Yes. And you're probably the only person buying it. Every time I get some I see Josh's face.
You know, I just kept it like filling bags, like, you know.
But what, do people have gas stoves or electric stoves? So we're sitting in your store, you have these great stainless steel tables, mm-hmm. and then you have 4 induction burners mm-hmm. that you teach on. So what do most people have?
I think most families have gas stoves.
Okay.
That works very well. You know, it's you can get as much as you want. You know, you're not limited by this power supply. So that's what most people have in their homes.
I think it's just space and temperature. Those are the really big things, or the premiums. Like, space
yes.
is the premium,
yes.
and then weather is just as what it is.
Right.
And so you find creative ways around it. Like, you yeah. find, like, you know, you wrap your beer, you know, you have the AC on for a certain number of hours, and then you turn it off and you put it somewhere. Or you kind of know you have a routine. I think Chris and I were talking about this when we first met, and you did that, right? You had the AC on in the night, or the daytime, or whatever, you turn it off at night, and layer and layer on top.
It's like you have a new pet at home, pretty much.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've been interviewed, you know, locally, and they ask us, and they've come to our houses before, and they're like, wow, you have 390 square feet, and your kitchen is, you know, like a corridor, and you're brewing in there? It's like, yeah, you're drinking what I made, right? You know?
Yeah.
And they're kind of like, oh, wow, yeah, if you really just have, you only need, because it's like cooking, if you think about it, you're just cooking, right? You're just using the kitchen, and you just need like one spot for it to ferment.
Right.
That's really all you really, really need. And then, so, yeah.
I think that is our show.
Yeah.
Anything, would anybody like to, any advice to new homebrewers or, you know, living in the city?
I guess the most common we get when I show people my homebrew kit is, that's it. So, it's that simple, you know, it's way more simple than you think it would be.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid.
Be afraid.
Try new things. Yeah.
And like he says, yeah, just do it.
Just do it. Just do it. So check out the Facebook page for the Hong Kong Homebrewers Association, which is
facebook.com/brewers.hk.
And check out the website to get homebrew ingredients here in Hong Kong at
www.hkbrewcraft.com.
Brewcraft with a C. Craft.
Yep.
Craft Brewers, Craft Beer Association. It's www.cbahk.com.
And there'll be a whole episode on this guy, right? What is your brewery?
And how can we find more?
Young Master Ales. More information on our website, youngmasterales.com.
Thank you guys so much for joining us on
Ferment About
It!
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.